some of you who would like to ask a question. Your question. Yes.
What do we do?
Did you repeat the question?
He asks, what do we do? You begin by looking deeply in other people's eyes. And then you'll know. Yes?
What makes meditation a spiritual practice?
Oh, that's the kind of question only you can answer. It's a game of definitions. And you need to choose your own definitions of the life that you live by. If you want to use the word spirituality, you define it for us. If you don't want to use it, it's fine with me. So in asking a very essential question, you have to do that work yourself. Come to the definition, what it means for you. Because then you're really speaking from something that's really essential for yourself, not what some other people are implying. Yes?
How can I be present in the midst of the demands of a very busy medical practice?
Just give up to your demands. The more demanding your life is, the less you resist your demands, the more present you'll be. Well, part of this, what we're doing here, if you're not satisfied with an answer, then continue until you're satisfied, or until I give up. But
I feel almost drowning in those demands.
A very important issue then is to look at the I that's drowning. Who is the I that's drowning? How can I love more and fear less? So for Terry, I told him to look deeply into other people's eyes. For you, I think you should look deeply into your own heart. Find a way to look deep inside there and you won't fear as much. And you'll love a lot. Find some way to go in here. Yes, Mark. How does one know happiness? I don't know what to say to that question. It knows itself. Somehow. That's what occurs to me. It knows itself. Yes?
How can I be free and still loving and connected to the world?
How could you not be free and still loving and connected to the world? I think they're the same thing. Yes?
Techniques to handle the recurrence of old resentments that may have been years ago, but they pop in your mind from time to time?
Any technique that can help you deal with old resentments that keep popping up. I think the best technique that I know is to study those resentments so carefully, so intimately, that you really understand what you're holding on to. Because there's no resentment without holding on to something. And when you learn what you're holding on to, you really see it, maybe then you'll stop holding on to it. Who am I? That was your question. Sorry?
It sounds like a cliche, but
yeah. So maybe there's something valuable in your stunness. Hang out there rather than the answer. Yes?
How can I learn to trust my instinct?
Make a lot of mistakes. Be willing to make mistakes. Yes?
Be here now?
Is that a question? Uh-huh. You have a choice?
Yeah.
You do, huh? Maybe it's an illusion. We certainly have the experience, the sense, or the interpretation that we're escaping or lost. But you're never anywhere but right where you are, here and now. So I have a question for you, if I may.
Okay.
What is it about here and now that makes you want to escape from it? Because?
Hard work.
So in Zen, they have a little saying that says, I don't remember it very well, but something like, be the one who's not busy. So the task is not to stop being busy, not stop doing a lot of things, but in the middle of your doing, to be at rest in it, to not have a doer in the doing. When I was working as a fast order cook, it was a lot of demands, different kind of demands than some people have, but it was very hectic and busy, and 10 things to do at once. And I gave myself up to the activity, gave up my resistance to what was being called for. And I had discovered an amazing stillness. I was furiously dancing and spinning and in the kitchen, but I was not doing anything. Yes, Jim?
How can I be more alive?
Take more risks. especially with people. Yes, Vasha.
How can I heal?
Love. Not just yourself, but just anybody you encounter. See if you can love them, even just a little bit. And if everyone you encounter, you can find just even teeny bit of love for them, you'll find that you'll heal. If that's the question. Yes.
Did Buddha feel love toward everyone? And I guess the question comes from
yes.
Your answer to that was you'll feel love towards others, and I don't.
That's right. You have to keep going to your personal question. Don't forget about the Buddha. That's just a front for something really personal.
If I can think that, well, Buddha loves this person, even though I don't, then there's a little chink of love.
Little what? Little?
There's indirectly some love for that person.
But what's below that? What's the real concern for you?
Well, you know, you're talking about taking risks and looking people in the eyes, and I don't. And I feel fearful and unloving and unloved and lonely and isolated.
Yes.
And you know, angry at people and judgmental.
So take it one step further, and what question you have in the middle of that? What would you like? What do you desire in the middle of that?
Feel that love and not the fear.
How comfortable are you with wanting that love? Really wanting it?
Well, I guess I'm not comfortable with myself, so there's a struggle going on.
And the desire to love and the desire to be loved. How strong is that? How comfortable are you with that desire? Those desires.
I guess I'm not.
I would encourage you to strengthen those desires. Find them in you. Study them. Get to know them. Do whatever you can. Like they're like a flame that needs to be strengthened and burns stronger and brighter. So you can't necessarily have love automatically, more love, but you can have a stronger desire for love. And the desire for love and the desire to be loved is a very powerful and important beginning of getting the things that you want. It's not what you want, but without having some healthy, strong desire for it, the heart won't be malleable enough for the love and the peace and that I think you want. Let the desire become stronger, and then see what those, and then listen to that desire, and see what you can do to follow through on it. Yes, Glenn.
It sounds like from what you said, a burning question is a good thing to fuel a spiritual practice, and I can't find one, so and I feel like my practice is a little bit that way too. So is that a problem?
I don't know you well enough to know that. It doesn't have to be a problem at all. There was a long period of time where I didn't have any particular question. I would actually go to my teacher and not have anything to say, just didn't have any question. And it seemed very right. And looking back for me, mostly it felt very, very right not to have a question. There are people who don't know why they're involved in the spiritual practice. It just intuitively feels right that they're kind of going ahead. And that's quite beautiful. It's sort of right in its own right. But maybe as I get to know you better, I can maybe have some more opinion about whether it'd be useful for you to have a greater question. Or maybe not. Bonnie?
I have too many questions. I'll just pick one. How do I find a sense of contentment, acceptance, and a sense of surrender in the midst of parenting teenagers?
I think it's pretty presumptuous for me to.
Well, you gave me that word surrender a few years ago, and it's helped me a lot, but it's hard to stay with that in the midst of.
I think that it's very important to consider, to not consider, but to stay very close to your priorities. And more important than meditating every day is to really finding some deep way of staying connected hour by hour, minute by minute, moment by moment, to your priorities. And if peace and contentment and the other one are strong enough, are real priorities for you, then figure out why you're not living by those priorities. What is it that pulls you away from that? But I would start with a very deep assessment of your priorities. Yes?
Go on. How do you increase more self-confidence in light of Buddhism? You know, how do you spread increasing more self-confidence in doing a certain thing?
This is what occurs to me, is that if a person has never played a musical instrument at all in their life, and the person asks, how can I develop more self-confidence playing this instrument? Unless the person starts learning the instrument, there's not going to be any self-confidence. The person has to learn some skills, and learning of skills gives self-confidence. So it might be that for you, you need to actually engage yourself at the learning of some skills. And some of the skills in the spiritual world, some of the skills are the skills of mindfulness. Some of the skills are the skills of restraint. Some of the skills are the skills of ethics, trying to live a moral life. The skills of listening to other people. The skills of being present. These are all kinds of skills that can be developed a little bit. And as they slowly get developed, for you, you can get confidence. Traditionally, the Buddha emphasized the first skill a person should develop is a skill of generosity. So a person begins practicing generosity with their smile, with little help for people around them, with whatever way they can be generous. And that sense of being able to be generous can give some confidence in one person, oh, I can be generous. And then the next level of confidence building the Buddha taught was that of morality. And the next level of confidence was confidence in cause and effect. Some confidence that if I'm mindful of my intentions in the moment, I'll know what intentions are harmful and what intentions are helpful. So these are all skills get developed. And so self-confidence is developed by developing skills. And if a person... thinks that self-confidence is supposed to be developed only by relaxing or letting go into something, they might be shortchanging themselves. So, Andrea.
What's the basis for making a choice when it seems that there's not a wrong answer?
Are there other criteria for making a decision or making a choice besides right and wrong? Those are very odd and abstract words. It's hard for me to relate to them.
I guess it's not so much right or wrong. That's just the words that came to me. It seems like at this juncture, I can choose one of two paths, and they equally seem possible and powerful, and I'm just not sure how to evaluate them.
One way to evaluate them is based on what you want. Do you know what you want?
I think so.
Yeah? And how does that relate to those two paths?
That's pretty clear.
So, there we go. You have the right answer. Besha.
How can I be compassionate and yet my boundaries to keep me healthy?
If you practice mindfulness of the body and mindfulness of the mind, just mindfulness in general, but especially of the body, and pay very careful attention to stress, you'll know exactly where that boundary is. Because as soon as your compassion, you open to compassionately to others or to the world, and at the moment when it gets to be too much, you'll feel a physical sense of stress. Mm-hmm. If you get very sensitive to that, you can go up against that level, just beyond it, because you begin to tighten up, and then you pull back. That's the indication, that's a cue that you've gone too far, you need to come back and find a balance. So your own sense of stress, of tightening, of contraction, is your best guide for your question. Yes? Why do you want to?
Because I don't want to have to keep trying to fix them.
So please permit me to ask you, why do you try to fix things? This is very important to study this. So maybe you think they'll give you love and acceptance.
Or some compulsive part of me thinks that.
So maybe you don't need to love things as they are. Maybe you need to love yourself. And everything else will follow. Because if you think you need love and acceptance from others, you know, no amount of love and acceptance for others is going to do it. It's really nice to have that, but no amount is going. You can get, you know, is going to do what you need. So do it for yourself. You have to love yourself, and then I think everything else will follow. Yes.
The distractions that come up for me during meditation tend to cluster under the category of planning.
Give up your fear. First, you have to recognize the fear that's there, the sense of fear and security. You have to see the fear and security really well, and then you can give up the fear. And if you give up the fear, I think your desire to control won't be there. It won't be needed anymore. So don't try to give up the sense of control. That's not really the issue. Yes.
How do you find that self-love?
Why do you want it? What's the suffering that this question comes from? So again, let me ask you, you answered, but let me ask you at a kind of a deeper level, what is this, what is your suffering that's at the core of this?
Fear of rejection. I think, I don't know.
What does it feel like?
What does it feel like?
Yeah, what is this the deep core suffering that's somehow fueling all this? What does that feel like? That suffocation, loneliness. What is the desire?
An end to
that. Mm-hmm.
I guess happiness or end of it.
End of it, huh? So I would suggest that you use the whatever peace and calm that you say you've gotten from a year and a half, and use that now to place yourself right in the middle of the suffocation, right in the middle of your deepest loneliness. Don't turn away from it. Just sit in the middle of it, and sit there and sit there. Just really, really let that be your whole world, your whole universe, and see what. There's something deeper. There's something deeper. There's not. If you hang out in your suffering long enough, I think you'll find the beauty that's deeper than your suffering. That's my idea. And if some other time you want to talk more about it, we can meet and talk about it some more. But.
Do I need to love impermanence to stop resenting it?
Do I need to love impermanence in order to stop resenting it?
Mm-hmm.
No? You can stop resenting it without having to burden yourself with the idea of love. Mark.
How do I learn cry tears starting to feel inside when you realizing I don't know enough about crying?
That's a very good question. I feel the passion in the question. Can you feel the passion or the emotions that kind of are fueling that question? I think if you use the question to go into those feelings, I think that you might not cry, but you might cry, but you won't waste your time by doing that. I think it's really precious, the passion or emotion that question comes from. Yes.
How do I see things as a moving art?
So, why do you want to do that? Oh, he wants to see how does he see? Well, I forgot your name. How does Peter see things as they really are? Is the question. And my question for Peter is, why do you want to?
I think that oftentimes I see things as I want them to be, as part of my dimension.
Uh-huh.
That's how things should be.
I don't have a quick or obvious question for your answer to your first question, except that you have to become an expert at recognizing not how things are, but how you want them to be different. You have to really get to understand your delusion and how your delusion works, rather than try to figure out what things really are. Does that make sense to you?
I guess it's similar to what she said earlier. You just accept things as they are instead of trying to change or manipulate things.
Yeah. But while you're still manipulating them, get to know your manipulation really well. And then if you get to know them really, really well, then you'll see things as they are. Yes.
I have a question about an answer. I've always had the fear of death. And I was very sick a few years ago and overcame it. And I'm just a teeny bit less afraid of death than I used to be. But I always thought the answer to that was, in order to be less afraid of death, you have to be more willing to live. Do you have another take on that? I think it has something to do with the fear she was talking about before. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Well, I've heard something similar to that. The two are closely connected. The people who tend to love life the most tend to be the ones least afraid of death. And the people who are most afraid of life, the most afraid of death. But I feel a little bit uncomfortable with the answer that you've heard, because it implies an imperative. So can you state it again, the answer that you heard?
Well, similar to what you're saying, that if you live life more fully, if you're not afraid to live, then you won't be afraid to death.
Right. Right. I'm comfortable with the second way of saying it myself, just my own quirkiness. Is that if you're not afraid to live, you won't be afraid to die, which means you have to really come to terms with your fear, which means you have to really look at it really honestly and not ricochet off it or recoil from it. Really hang in there and really use your ability to get concentrated to really stay there with your fear and work with it and understand it and find trust in the middle of it. I'm comfortable with that. I think it's... Last one, yes.
What is my purpose, or why am I here?
You have to tell me why that question is there for you.
I think it relates to Andrea and having to make decisions and wanting some kind of firmer basis for making decisions.
And why is that an issue for you? And how does the idea that there is a right decision affect you? How what's your relationship to that idea that there's a right decision?
I guess I'm picturing parents over me saying, "You're making the wrong decision."
And if your parents weren't hanging over you saying, don't make the wrong decision, what would you do? Or how would you be? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to, you know, this kind of forum like we're here to kind of respond to your concern here. But I would suggest that maybe it's not the case. Maybe if somehow you drop the burden of having these voices over your shoulder kind of telling you there's a right way and you shouldn't make a mistake, that if all those internalized voices of others stopped operating, maybe it would be really clear. And so your job is not so much to figure out what to do as it is to somehow empty yourself of all these parental voices. Take a few minutes, sit quietly.